Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
Welcome to this week's edition of Latin Waves. On the first part of the show, we interview Kevin Pena. Kevin Pena is a documentary filmmaker and freelance journalist who's been working and living in Haiti during the 2004 coup that ousted President Aristide from power. He's been covering events in Haiti for the past decade. Kevin speaks about the recent November 28th elections that took place despite the fact that Haiti is still recovering from the earthquake that killed over 200,000 people, with a million still being homeless, despite the ongoing cholera outbreak. On the second part of the show, we speak to independent journalist John Elmer from Bethlehem. He speaks to us about the ongoing mission in Afghanistan, the situation on the ground, and what role Canada's civil society should be playing in this conflict. So stay tuned.
Cuchillo a manos de la patria, ni un cuchillo ni un rifle para nadie. La tierra es de todos como el aire. Me gustaría tener manos enormes, tener manos violentas y salvajes, para arrancar fronteras una a una y dejar de fronteras solo el aire. Que nadie tenga tierra como se tiene traje, que todos tengan tierra como se tiene el aire. Que nadie tenga tierra como se tiene traje, que todos tengan tierra como se tiene el aire. Cogería las guerras de la punta y no dejaría una en el paisaje, y abriría la tierra para todos como si fuera el aire. Que el aire no esté nadie, 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 y todos tienen su parcela de aire, y todos tienen su parcela de aire. We'll be right back. quiero un cuchillo en manos de la patria. Ni un cuchillo ni un rifle para nadie. La tierra es de todos, como el aire. 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 La tierra es de todos, como el aire.
That was the incredible music and lyrics of Intacto. It's actually a Quebec band, and that song talks about we are all part of the earth. And he says, and just like air, we should all have access, we should all have a right to take only what we need, to use only what we need. It doesn't belong to one person, it doesn't belong to a few interests, it belongs to all, and we belong to it. A beautiful melody that I think ought to remind us of how often our own governments undermine this sentiment that in order to live in a world that's sustainable, we need to consider the rights of others. We need to consider the rights of others to live and to be allowed to exist in peace. Someone who has documented and travel extensively through Haiti is Kevin Pina. He is an international journalist, and as an independent international journalist, Kevin Pina has not only put himself on the line, he's been someone who has documented the trajectory of Haiti. Welcome to our show, Kevin.
Good morning. Buenos dias.
Buenos dias. We are living in a time where people have been moved by the incredible disaster, the earthquake of January. Can you talk a little bit about where Haiti is today in the brink of elections, yet again, where the primary party of the people is not allowed to run?
Well, of course, Haiti has not had a really independent and democratic government since the ousting of Jean-Bertrand d'Aristide in February of 2004. Unfortunately, that has not only been a test to the dignity of the Haitian people, but it's also greatly debilitated the ability of the Haitian government and the Haitian state to fend for its own people. And of course, that includes after what you just mentioned, which was the tremendous earthquake that struck Haiti on January the 12th of this year, where we had more than 230,000 people killed, more than 200,000 wounded, 1.3 million left homeless. And then, of course, after that, the cholera epidemic, which is still raging through the country today, is expected to affect as many as 800,000 people over the next 6 months. More than 2,000 people have died from it. And after all of the political machinations that have been against these poor people, in the midst of this crisis, the international community desperately needs to legitimize what they've done. Under these conditions, they force the Haitians to hold elections. And the real tragedy of this is that, of course, people are saying that these elections were fraudulent, and that's clearly true. The ballot boxes were stuffed. And, of course, the international community doesn't care because, again, they desperately need these. And this includes Canada as well. The Canadian government, which is a large part of this as well, funded those elections as well on November the 28th. But they desperately need them. And so despite the fraud, the international community says these are great elections. The shameful role of the Organization of American States in supporting this farce in Haiti also continues. But the truth is, this is a deception masquerading as a fraud or fraudulent elections. Because the real story that the press, and that includes the Canadian press as well as the press in the United States, what they're not reporting on is the fact that less than 10% of the voters actually voted in these elections. And that relates directly back to this question of the overthrowing of Aristide and the attempt to destroy his political movement, the political movement, popular movement of the Haitian people called Lavalas, or Flash Flood, because that low voter turnout reflects again that the majority political party, the most popular party in the country, namely the Lavalas party, was excluded from those elections because it is populist, because it opposed neoliberal economic policies, because it was independent. And so the real story of those Sunday elections on November the 28th is that less than 10% of the population voted, and that this is again the Haitian people saying no to this project of the international community to shove their view, their vision for Haiti down the throats of the Haitian people.
One of the questions we must ask then is what maintains this structure in place that sustained the military coup government to still continue to hold power?
The veneer of legitimacy is given to it by the United Nations, by the international community. Haiti from 2004 to 2006 represents one of the greatest human rights cover-ups in the history of America Latina and the Caribbean. Thousands of Haitians brutally murdered, thousands of political prisoners, thousands more forced into exile. Very little said by Amnesty International, by Human Rights Watch, and all of this supported under the aegis and umbrella of a United Nations Security Council resolution. With, of course, the armies of Brazil, Argentina, and Chile being the ones responsible primarily for the military mission called MINUSTA of the United Nations on the ground in Haiti, being led primarily by the Brazilians, the Brasileños. It's no accident that the three militaries, anyone, and I think I've said this to your listeners before, Brazil, Argentina, and Chile, those three militaries have the most heinous human rights records in the history of the hemisphere. And yet overnight, they are whitewashed and transformed into peacekeepers, as if those institutions lost their institutional memory and are not the same militaries that were responsible for murdering thousands and thousands of their own citizens in dirty wars, in anti-communist purges and pogroms and campaigns that resulted in destroying the lives of thousands of their own citizens. Suddenly were to believe that the leopard has changed their spots because now they're wearing blue helmets. But of course, what we also saw is that the United Nations helped to train the death squads and the former brutal military who, during those years of 2004 and 2006, slaughtered, arrested, tortured, jailed, and forced into exile thousands of Haitians, not unlike what was done in the countries of those three militaries representing the United Nations.
In your film, We Must Kill the Bandits, you chronicle the abuses of Haitian democracy at the hands of the United Nations and its American, Canadian, and French sponsors. Can you speak about our role as Canadians and why it's important for Canadian citizens to take an active role to change our country's foreign policy in Haiti?
Well, of course, as I said, most contemporaneously is the fact that Canada helped to fund these elections, these so-called elections, this last November the 28th, which of course have resulted in utter chaos inside of Haiti itself. But more importantly, when I discuss about how the United Nations and the international community had supported the Haitian police while they were killing their own citizens, it was Canada that had the primary responsibility with the RCMP in Haiti to train the Haitian police as they were killing their own people. It was the Canadian government that was funding the judiciary, the reform, the quote-unquote reformation of the judiciary in the Haitian courts, while those same courts were the most politicized ever and were responsible for holding people for no other reason than their political affiliations, which of course is the definition of political prisoners. And Canada had a direct role and responsibility in all of that. Very well documented.
What role has the NGOs, the non-government organizations, played in upholding these structures and creating almost an impossibility for a sovereign rule within the country of Haiti?
You know, no question. I mean, I should have also mentioned that immediately following the oust of Aristide in 2004, Canadian Special Forces were in the ground already before the man was taken out on a plane, forced onto a plane by U.S. Marines and flown to Bangui, the capital of the Central African Republic, against his will. Canadian Special Forces already were on the ground as part of what became the multinational interim force, which also included French Foreign Legion as well as United States Marines. In the days following Aristide's ouster, they deployed, but they had already been there. Of course, I mentioned the RCMP is another component, but then the other side of this is CISA, the Canadian International Development Agency, which goes hand in hand with these military and police components, because it's mirroring its counterparts in the United States, which of course would be the U.S. military, U.S. police, and then the United States Agency for International Development. So CEDA, like USAID, has been involved before the coup against Aristide in 2004 in funding and penetrating Haitian society, in funding and creating an opposition movement that gave legitimacy to the ousting of the democratic government in 2004. And that has continued after the coup, where CEDA continues to fund students' groups, peasant groups, women's groups, all of which are penetrating every aspect of Haitian society, softening Haitian opinion, trying to shape and mold Haitian opinion to accept neoliberal economic policies, which means to accept that Haitians are not worth more than $2 a day, which is what has become the official legislated minimum, daily minimum wage in Haiti, if you can believe that. It's CEDA who, through these different organizations, softens the blow. It's CEDA who builds this almost faux consensus by involving Haitians who are called leaders of quote-unquote civil society, who then, by virtue of what little power and what little economic advantage they're able to gain by working through non-governmental organizations funded by CEDA, then, of course, will then allow neoliberal economic policies, will then support neoliberal economic policies, including selling their fellow Haitians as virtual human chattel for $2 a day.
What has been the impact of this entrenching of neoliberal policies in the economy in terms of the loss of public institutions or public assets for Haitians?
Well, Haiti had very little to begin with, and it's one of the reasons that Aristide had to go and his government had to go, because they opposed not only neoliberal economic policies, but they refused to sell off state-run industries and took profits from them and reinvested them in so-called social programs, which included universal literacy programs, which included more hospitals, free hospitals and health care, which included working more closely with Cuba and training more doctors and nurses, and, of course, building more schools than had ever been built in Haiti's entire 200-year history, universities and middle schools and elementary schools. This was a big no-no, and this was one of the reasons that Aristide and the Lavalas movement had to be taken from power, and today that being continued, being kept out of power by being excluded on technicalities from participating in free and fair elections, of course rendering those elections neither free nor fair. What's at stake, of course, is what Haiti will look like, which is really a question of what our world will look like. Haiti holds down the bottom of the price of wage labor in the hemisphere and thus does so in the world, meaning that Haiti is the lowest rung of paid workers against which all other workforces must necessarily compete for large multinational corporations to do business. We know that, for example, the Canadian company Gildan Activewear, which is one of the largest apparel manufacturers in the world, is very good at this. At one moment, they have their factories in Mexico and Honduras. The workers of those two countries get together through their labor unions, organize for better wages, organize for better conditions, which would cost Gildan Activewear tens of millions of dollars in worker concessions. Gildan Activewear threatens to move to Haiti in order to forestall those demands, but then ultimately does move to Haiti and post one of its most significant quarterly profits in the history of the entire company by taking advantage of much cheaper Haitian labor. Well, that's the role that Haiti plays in the hemisphere and in the world. It is used as leverage against other workforces to keep down the price of wage labor, thus saving corporations, international corporations, transnational corporations, tens, hundreds of millions of dollars.
So describe the compounded effect in terms of the living conditions of Haitians today faced with this historic level of aggression, I would say economic, military, and political aggression against them.
When you have 1.3 million people homeless, and there's a cholera epidemic raging, and then you encourage people to go to the polls to vote, thus spreading the cholera further. I don't know how else to describe that, if not intentional, certainly unintentional genocide. It is utterly ridiculous the way that Haitians are being treated, particularly if you understand that, and this includes Canadians, Canadian relief organizations, private charities internationally, including Canadian charities and a lot of Canadian citizens who gave their money to international charities, they raised $4 billion after the earthquake. If you go to what's called the Disaster Accountability Project, if you just do a Google search on that, you'll find that those private charities that raised that $4 billion have only expended $1 billion on the ground to help Haitians. The other 75% or $3 billion has sat in bank accounts collecting interest ever since. Haiti, while it's being used as a way for charities to raise money, Haitians themselves continue to suffer terribly. It never have so many gained so much off of the misery of so many. It's an utterly scandalous situation. If Canadians gave to the Red Cross, if Canadians gave to Catholic Relief Services, if you gave to Save the Children, you need to call those organizations and demand to ask them how much of the money, of the total, how much money did they raise for Haiti to help Haitians since the earthquake January the 12th, and how much of it have they actually spent on the ground, and where is the rest of the money? And then tell them that you know the truth. Go to the Disaster Accountability Project website, tell them you know the truth, and tell them you want to know where your money is, and you want to hold them accountable. And then, of course, there's the, as I had said, there's the utter shame of the non-governmental organizations that are funded by our own governments, rather than helping the Haitian people and working with local communities to identify their own priorities and help them based on their own leadership, community leadership. Instead, of course, they come in with the idea that they are bringing Haitians something that they do not already possess, which, of course, is an assumption of them being complete idiots and lacking intelligence. And what it does is it really defeats people's community spirit. It defeats community initiative, which is absolutely essential in these times of tragedy. The fabric of communities is only strengthened by strengthening their capacity for leadership and identifying their own priorities in their own communities and in their own streets. That is not what our non-governmental organizations that our governments fund do. They come in with their own plans that they impose upon these communities, robbing those communities not only of the right and sovereignty to lead in their own countries and in their own communities, but also robbing them of their dignity and their spirit.
Why should Canadian people take an initiative and care about this issue? What should be our role?
Well, we all have a direct role already. As I said, our governments have helped create this mess in Haiti. If you have any doubt, it's very simple to research. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to draw a direct correlation between our tax dollars and what's happening on the ground in Haiti. We have a responsibility to demand that our governments, first of all, to know what our governments are doing in our name with our tax dollars internationally and in the world, but also to demand that it reflects our values, our social values. Are our values to be based on militarism? Are our values to be based on imperialism, where we impose ourselves upon other sovereign nations and sovereign people in their own communities? Or are we going to demand that our governments would treat others as we would like to be treated ourselves? Are we going to allow our governments to have several definitions of democracy, one which applies to ourselves internally, one person, one vote, but when it comes to places like Honduras and Haiti, we apply a different definition of democracy, which allows military coups and takeovers, where we redefine what we deem to be democratic? Do we allow this hypocrisy to continue as citizens being represented by our governments? I don't think so. I think that of course we need to take responsibility, you know, not only for our own communities and our own countries, but we need to take responsibility for what our governments are doing, are creating, how they are representing us, how they are using our money to represent us through their actions, through their foreign policy, through our foreign policy projected in the world.
Thank you so much for being with us. How do people access your report?
Well, you know, there's been, people probably know by now of the WikiLeaks documents, the embassy cables that were released, hundreds of thousands of cables from all over the world that give a view of U.S. foreign policy, and several of them dealt with Haiti, and particularly assessments of President René Préval, current President Préval. And I know that WikiLeaks recently was under attack, their servers are under attack, and people have been trying to get a hold of the U.S. Embassy cables pertaining to Haiti. And so in response to that, we have posted them in their entirety on our website if people would like to read them. Also, if you'd like to support the work of the organization that I work with, which is a collaboration with Haitian journalists on the ground in Haiti, it's the Haiti Information Project. You can also look at my latest documentary film for a very meager fee, $2.99 US, online. It's pay-per-view, broadband streaming online, and it's called Haiti, We Must Kill the Bandits, and it's produced by the Haiti Information Project. Every time you watch that film online, that money goes directly to supporting our work and helping to continue to work with Haitian journalists on the ground to get the word out about the truth. And you can access all of that information at www.haitiinformationproject.blogspot.com. Again, that's haitiinformationproject.blogspot.com.
Thank you again for being with us, Kevin.
My pleasure.
Take care.
You are listening to Latin Waves, a weekly syndicated program. For more information about our program, visit www.latinwavesmedia.com.